Hi, we are Enterprise Splaining, a podcast where we splain Star Trek Enterprise to each other and to you. I'm Bill, and I am joined, as always, by my hostesses with the mostesses, Jamie.
Hi.
And Maria.
Hello.
Today we're going to be talking about Season 1, Episode 4 of Star Trek Enterprise, Unexpected. However, I'm the only person who has actually watched it, so it's my job to explain to my co-host what happened on the episode. But before we get to that, we need to wrap up a little bit of discussion about last week's episode, which was hosted by Maria. And now both Jamie and I have seen the episode. Jamie, do you have any thoughts you want to share about Strange New World?
The first thing I have to say is, Bill, you were wrong.
I was wrong. I frequently
am. You were wrong about something. Surprise.
Okay, lay it on me.
No. So during our discussion, we were talking about marsupial, like alien marsupials. And I said, like, you can't have a marsupial and an alien, like you can't have an alien marsupial. And you were like, well, I don't see why not. Like, you could have a mammal on an alien planet, right?
Sure. I do remember saying that.
And you said it in this like very authoritative, like white man voice. And I was like, well, that sounds right, I guess. Like, you were so confident.
Bill has one move, and that's it.
So I just sort of went with it. And then afterwards, I was like, I don't know if that's right, actually. I don't think you can have a mammal, like an alien mammal, either. So I reached out to friend of the pod, Emily Fink. They are a science communicator. And I asked them, if you have aliens on an alien planet that through convergent evolution, which is when two like species that are not related evolutionarily both evolve the same characteristics. Mm-hmm. So if you have a species on an alien planet that through convergent evolution evolves to be very similar to a marsupial, would it be a marsupial? Like, could you call it a marsupial? And Emily said, in the case of a different planet, you'd probably specify the planet's native marsupials. So basically, you would call it like planet's native marsupial, like planet name, native marsupial, as a shorthand for the characteristics, understanding that they are not actually related to Earth marsupials and follow a different evolutionary lineage. They said that a good comparison would be that scientists in Star Trek would look at various marsupial-like populations on different planets in the same way that Darwin looked at different populations of finches. So they said, yes, Darwin's finches were related at the beginning, but the interesting thing isn't the relationship, it's how the different environments shaped the species. And then they added that Starfleet behavioral ecologist conferences likely have giant fights over whether you can call these species marsupials or not.
That's the show I want to watch.
Yeah, me too. I would go to that con so fast.
So, I'm sorry. I know. I'm frequently wrong. What was I wrong about this time? They can't be
that they're.
Yeah, you can't have a marsupial or even a mammal that you like find on an alien planet because they don't have the same evolutionary lineage.
But didn't you just read saying that they would say that? Well, they would just say it.
They would be like marsupial-like or mammal-like.
Yeah, they would be like, they would say they have a mammal-like creature. But I get that. I also get why they would just use marsupial or mammal.
Yeah.
In this context.
Yeah, it seems like colloquially you might just call it a marsupial. But technically, it would not be a marsupial.
Look, I'm more embarrassed that I spent any time sticking up for Star Trek Enterprise's scientific veracity than anything else. So I'm going to take the L on this one.
But as to the actual episode itself, I did not like this episode. Sure. I found it really uncomfortable. Like, when you were describing the episode, it didn't quite get across how like terrified T'Pol seemed, which it felt very like it just felt very uncomfortable. Like, she was clearly terrified. I also just thought it was a mistake for this show to do an episode so early in its run where the characters, like an alien thing, are causing characters to act out of character when we don't even know what they are like in character yet.
Right. Yeah. I agree. I had very similar problems. It was severely uncomfortable for me to watch how how out of control Trip got at the end of that, you know, in the midst of all of that.
And like Trip being a xenophobic asshole, like this is the most Trip we've ever gotten. We've gotten very little Trip up till now. And so now this is like how I think of him.
Bill, what'd you think?
I thought I agree a lot with Jamie. Obviously, they're trying to do a scary episode because they're camping, they're telling ghost stories, but then it veers off from being a scary movie to being like a straight up, like, not like a horror movie, not like a Jason slasher movie, but like you said, like the everybody's screaming at each other. It's like, what was it? What was the movie about where people get the 28 Days Later, where people get the violent?
Swear to do two horror episodes in a row, too.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I did want to praise for watching this episode is I thought that the effect of, cause you described them as rock people, they're the people in the rocks and stuff. So I was picturing something like, you know, the Horda or, you know, the other rock, like aliens that we've seen on this stuff. But I really like the effective way they shot this, where it's just, you see somebody just walking off into the shadows. Like you just miss them.
Yeah. You just miss them.
And I thought that was, and I was just gonna say, it becomes very clear early on. Like they try to play it up like a mystery, but it's very clear that something is affecting them and making them super paranoid, which isn't, it'd be more interesting if, you know, Trip or whoever just became super cold and was like trying to like, oh, you didn't talk to any aliens, but in his head's like, but I saw her talking to aliens. So.
Yeah. I wonder if part of this was, or the intention was that we were supposed to think, we were supposed to question whether she was actually talking, there were actually aliens, she was actually right. Betraying, because we don't know the character. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if they were trying to create that. You know, we're not really sure, but I don't think they did a very good job, because no. it felt almost immediately like, oh yeah, no,
everybody, it was clearly like they were clearly going crazy.
Yeah, well, problem. Particularly with what's-his-name Redshirt, who went out, like, and was just like, go to hell!
Just performing his one-man version of King Lear for the...
I actually kind of like the idea of the episode. I just feel like maybe if they'd done it without the xenophobia, it would have worked better. Because that just made me just not like this. Because I can see it being, like, paranoid and untrusting, but like, do you have to add racism into it?
It's also,
I think they did, though. I think the whole point of this, I think the whole point of what they're trying to do is show that humans are these provincial dicks who have no idea what they're doing and are blundering out in space, and of course some of them are going to be xenophobic, you know?
Does this show work better if T'Pol is not a Vulcan, if she is just some other race that we don't know?
Well, then her character doesn't even make sense.
Well, no, I mean, they fill the same role. Like, they were, okay, so yeah, the humans met the Vulcans and that put them in space. But now this other race actually has all the best technology. She's just not a Vulcan because I as a Trekkie.
Like, if she was whatever,
like a non-human, some other race. Yeah. I feel like that character needs to be Vulcan because we need to learn about, like, the relationship between the humans and the Vulcans is in a really weird spot. And I do think that makes it interesting. Like, I think that's what makes her character so interesting, but I understand the characters having like a little bit of xenophobia, but it just went way overboard with like making fun of like her language and just other stuff like that. I really didn't like it.
I also think that like she has to be a Vulcan because we know Vulcans, because we know, like, the humans in the show don't trust them, but we know Vulcans are, you know, they're weird, but they're generally good. They're generally trying to help us, and they're always logical. Like,
sitting
that's
right
the
here,
one
Maria.
Fucking thing we know.
Okay, that I'm not. Now that we got that out of the way, it's time to talk about this week's episode. Computer, what episode are we talking about this week?
Season 1, Episode 4, Unexpected. After discovering the presence of a damaged alien vessel, Archer dispatches Tucker to its aid, but the engineer's encounter with a Zerillian female has an unexpected side effect.
Two truths and a lie. I am going to make three statements about this episode, two of which are true, one of which is not, and Maria and Jamie will try to suss out what I'm talking about here. Statement 1. Everything on the ship goes wrong, and it's totally not Trip's fault. Statement 2. Sato programs the universal translator, and it 100% functions correctly. Statement 3. To subvert the temporal Cold War, command of the Enterprise is temporarily transferred to Porthos.
I cannot tell you how much I want that to be true.
I cannot tell you how much all three of these sound like lies.
Yeah, they all sound like lies.
Like, number 3, Porthos, yeah. I want it, but there is no way that no command way. Is being transferred to Porthos.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I also feel like, I know that, like, I actually did watch a few episodes of Enterprise, and I feel like I would have remembered control of the Enterprise going to Porthos. I feel like that would have. So yes, I think 3.
Cold open. Archer's taking a shower.
All right.
It's not a sexy decontamination shower. He is taking an actual water shower.
But is it sexy?
Well, that's up to you, because there is a huge racing stripe around the shower area, so you can't see anything. But then the craziest thing happens. Guess what? Artificial gravity turns off. All the water starts floating up in the air. Archer's floating up in the air. He doesn't like this. So, oh my
God. Wow.
Archer calls up to the bridge and says, "Hey, what's going on up there, guys?"
Guys.
And the British guy says, "We're having some problems with the anti-grav. Should be fixed any minute now. Is there a problem, no. Captain?" No, I'm fine. Gravity comes on like that, and he falls on his butt onto the floor. Now, Bakula or his body double was clearly naked, but they definitely did the Austin Powers thing where they framed it exactly so that you cannot see. But whoever fell on that cold shower floor, which is kind of a dangerous fall. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you would think that they would have like a safety system so when gravity turns back on, it would like go slow or something. Like it would turn on slowly, not all at once.
Hey, guess what, everybody? We have faith. It's time for what we've all been waiting for, Jamie's Diane Warren fact of the week.
I have some great updates this week. Two of them, actually. Right. So the first one is an Instagram post from one Miss Britney Spears. She just recently posted on her Instagram a throwback photo. It's a black and white photo. On her right side, so she's in the photo, and then on her right side is a young Ben Affleck with a goatee. And on her left side is amazing. Our queen herself, Diane Warren.
Amazing.
So, yeah, I mean, when I saw Britney Spears post a photo of Diane Warren on her Instagram, I was like, this is amazing.
You immediately ran around saying, "Who's this strange blonde woman hanging out with Diane Warren?"
But, okay, so the caption reads, "Cool pic of me and Ben Affleck and Diane Warren years ago. 2 crying laughing emojis. He's such an amazing actor. Did I fail to mention I made out with Ben that night? I almost forgot. Damn, that's crazy." So,
which in my opinion implies she also made out with Diane Warren. At least
we don't know when this photo was taken. She doesn't like say when it was. Their clothing, it's a little hard to tell. It looks like late 90s. But I like to imagine that Diane Warren was like watching Britney Spears and Ben Affleck make out, and then she's like, I have an inspiration. And she like went home. And she wrote Faith of the Heart. This is my headcanon.
I love that headcanon. I'm in.
But I actually have a second Diane Warren update this week because it's like big news. It was just announced that there is a new Broadway musical about Diane Warren's life that is going to be featuring her music that is already in production. The name of it is, so it's going to be called Obsessed, which is, it's like it was made for me, you guys.
Sure.
Y'all, how is there so much current Diane Warren trivia happening.
She is out here, like, doing things. She's active.
Respect.
See, what you're missing, Maria, is that this podcast is going to be so popular in the future that they're doing a temporal ad campaign to get ahead of the massive interest in Diane Warren.
That seems like an appropriate use of time
travel. This is supposedly about her life. It's not like the Billy Joel musical where they just used his song.
No, it's going to be about Diane Warren's life. So it doesn't say which of her songs will be in it, except Taylor Swift's Say Don't Go. Mm-hmm. So we don't know what other songs will be in it. So we don't know if Faith of the Heart is in this musical.
It's going to be the second act curtain closer, I guarantee you.
I like to imagine there's going to be, like, a whole plot point where she, like, writes Faith of the Heart for Patch Adams, but then it gets used in Enterprise, and then, like, Star Trek fans get mad, and then she's, like, sad about it, and she probably, like, it's like, the low point of the musical.
What if Star Trek fans are, the villain of the show? What if they're just, like, there at every point of her life?
They're doing the trolls. Yeah. I love it. I'm in.
Yeah, it's like when she's at her lowest point, so then she can be, like, built back up again.
Sure. Thank you so much, Jamie. All right, we're back to the episode. Hey, it's breakfast time, and guess what that means? Someone's going to hassle to Paul.
Of course.
This time it's Phlox.
Please don't have him, like, talking about what she's eating and complaining about it.
So Phlox noticed that T'Pol is having Flomek broth, a traditional morning meal for Vulcans. Which he considers unexciting. He suggests she brands out a bit more and does this by taking a blueberry pancake off his plate, rolling it up, and holding it towards her mouth.
Ew! Is that as terrible as it sounds?
It's a little less terrible. I'm making it sound worse, but it does actually happen.
It's still pretty terrible.
In the episode.
Has every single episode we have watched so far had a scene where somebody is commenting on something another person is eating?
Certainly mine did.
Yeah, the first one definitely did because it was talking about how the meat smelled.
And then mine had the cold open was them talking because she was eating. And it was Vulcan food again. It wasn't T'Pol, but it was the crew member who was eating Vulcan food. So maybe they're trying to make a ha-ha Vulcan food sucks joke. But
I don't know. T'Pol, in an effort to get away from him, pretends she has to go get a drink. She pushes a button on the controller and says, water carbonated, which I think is the first time we've seen somebody actually talking to the computer here. But she doesn't get water. What she gets just kind of looks like the poop emoji. It's just a big black sludge in her cup.
Wait, is this a replicator? Because I thought they didn't have replicators yet.
Unknown. It could just be a vending machine, but she literally goes up to it, puts a glass in it, presses the button, and says what she... So maybe it's just like a voice-activated, one of those Coke machines you see at the movie theaters where you can, like, choose your own flavors. Meanwhile, in engineering, all hell is breaking loose, and Trip cannot figure why. Literally everything is going wrong on the ship. C-Deck is down to 12 degrees, and they are getting reports that they have a power fluctuation in the starboard nacelle, to which Trip replies... We'll get to it as soon as we can. Now,
that seems like an important thing to maybe...
It does, right. Because the
nacelle... I feel like his triage is a little out of whack here.
Jamie, do you know what we're talking about here?
No.
The cell. So if you think of the Enterprise, so you have the saucer section, you have the body, and then you have the two sticks coming off the end. Those are the nacelles. That's what generates the warp field. That's a big part of the engine.
Okay.
Yeah. So if there's something, it's basically like, you're in a plane and one of the engines is acting up. Perhaps you should look at that.
Okay.
Before fixing the replicators.
That is an excellent point, Maria, because Archer shows up to figure out what the hell's going on. There's some kind of problem with the plasma exhaust, and it's affecting half the systems. Archer suggests that they should drop out of warp. They're still in warp.
They're in warp?
Was my first reaction.
Yeah, I got... What about the showers?
He was dressed in his uniform, but it would have been so great if Archer had showed up with like a bath towel like wrapped around his head.
Oh, I'd love that. Ugh.
Wearing like big floppy shippers. Like,
what the hell, man?
Trip says, "Give me a minute," as he's dealing with all those problems, and then a fire breaks out in engineering.
Just a straight up fire.
A straight up explode, like a classic, you know, the panel explodes and suddenly there's fire there. Archer takes out the fire extinguisher.
Panel exploding is like one of my favorite like Star Trek cliches. Isn't it
great?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It makes no sense why they would build these ships in a way that, like, when they get shot at, like, panels, just, like, on the bridge in engineering just explode. And, like, sometimes, like, characters die because, like, they're just standing at a panel and the panel explodes.
Yeah, Jamie, you know how it is. Sometimes you're just working on your computer and your monitor blows up. I mean, that's just the risks you take.
It just feels like that...
That was the
thing.
It just
feels like there should be some sort of safety system in place to like have the explosion happen before it gets all the way to the panel where the people are working.
A key point is that during the eugenics war, humanity lost the knowledge of capacitors and resistors. So the only thing they could do is run the full power of the ship's reactor through every single piece of wiring.
The only way to make it work.
Trip reluctantly tells the bridge maybe they should drop out of warp.
I'm still stuck on they were in warp.
They were in warp with a malfunctioning nacelle.
Not just the nacelle, like the whole ship's falling apart.
The whole ship is going to hell.
Fucking fire's breaking out in engineering and you're still in warp? Picard would not have put up with this bullshit.
Meanwhile, in the non-burning part of engineering, T'Pol has figured out what the problem is. Guess how everyone reacts to this information.
They get annoyed.
They're like, stop talking. We're busy trying to be in warp.
And they don't believe her.
They agree with her immediately and instantly formulate a plan based on what she says.
What?
T'Pol points out that they are having, there's something wrong. Something they can't see is tailgating them in the plasma flare, which is causing it to explode nearer to the ship than it should. Trip immediately says, "You're right."
Like, does he use those words?
He says, "You're right." Yes. And I watched very closely. It appears to have been done in one take. It wasn't like he was on the moon and then he was on Earth. And like, no. T'Pol says, "There's a problem here." Trip goes, "You're right." Archer looks at that and goes, suggests that they do something. How could we do this safely?
Maybe he did learn something from his drug experience last week.
Yeah.
So they come up with a plan to polarize the hull and then cause an ignition right behind the ship to see if they can figure out what is there.
Polarize they do it. The hull?
It's okay, their version of shielding.
Jamie, okay. Basically, sure. That's a, like polarizing shit is sort of like
reversing the capacity.
Your go-to standard thing. We're just going to polarize some shit. It's sort of like when you hear, that nebula is releasing chronoton particles. Yeah. You know there's going to be time travel. They're going to fuck up. It's step one of troubleshooting in Star Trek.
So, Archer suggests an idea and then asks what the consequences will be, and his crew gives him advice, and he follows it.
I don't understand what's happening. Did you watch the right show?
I'm pretty sure. Something bursts right behind the ship, but Archer has been recording this. There is some kind of cloaked ship behind them that has been drafting in their warp field. Archer hails them and is actually super chill about this. He explains who they are, says, "Please back off to a distance of so many kilometers, and we'll talk about this and find out what's going on." They get a message. They don't have visuals. They get a message back that the universal translator audibly translates as, "We're sorry, please don't attack us. Please don't attack us." Archer explains that he has no intention of attacking them. He just wants to figure out what's going on. because they have been disrupting his ship.
So are those our two? So are
the two truths. I am sorry to tell you, at no point in this episode is Porthos made acting commander of the Enterprise.
Some bullshit.
The aliens further explain that they're having some kind of problem with their teraphasic coils, and they were using the plasma exhaust to replenish them. So this has all been audio. There's no video. The ship decloaks. It doesn't look like anything that I have seen before. I was kind of expecting maybe this was the Romulans, although I know that doesn't happen until later. Nope, completely new race. We have never seen this ship before. So they figure out they're going to have to send somebody over to help these aliens with their ship. Medical bay. Phlox is giving injections to Trip because apparently he's going over to the alien ship, and this medicine will shorten the decompression process by half. So now we're back to an issue we talked about in the pilot, which is, I don't think you meant to use that word.
Yeah, I was just about to say, decompression.
Because they make a big deal about the fact that Trip, in order to go onto this alien ship, will have to go through decompression for 3 hours each way. I think what they meant to say is acclimatization. So they've talked to the aliens. They've given the aliens information on human biology, including what food Trip will be able to eat. They're pretty sure they can synthesize it, but they're not sure what the taste will be. T'Pol says to Trip, try to be diplomatic. How does Archer respond to this? He agrees with her.
Oh my God, what is happening?
He says to Trip, remember to mind your manners. After which I have in bold caps, what show is this?
What is happening?
So Tucker is shuttled over to the alien ship. Mayweather is sad he doesn't get to see what they look like. They have had no visual contact with these aliens thus far. But Trip says he'll just treat it like a blind date.
Oh, of course he will.
He climbs into a cylindrical airlock. Door closes. Smoke starts seeping in. He is coughing. He says that it's burning. And a female voice tells him to maintain his normal rate of respiration. The discomfort will subside.
So this is the decompression process?
This is apparently what he has to spend 3 hours going through.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, wait.
It does seem like he's supposed to, like, acclimatize.
Cut to Archer's cabin. He's wearing Starfleet casual. It looks very sort of Nancy Myers. It's hard to tell if it's loungewear or jammies, but it's definitely like sort of like a collared shirt. Very comfortable. He's just hanging out. He gets a notification that Trip is calling again, and Archer rolls his eyes at the notion.
Yes! Wait, Trip went alone?
Yes.
Do they know anything about these aliens?
Nothing except what they sound like. They don't even know what they look like.
They know that they were tailgating them and causing problems on their ship.
I mean, they could be human-eating monsters. Please let them be human-eating monsters.
Yeah, they could definitely be the aliens from before. Like,
from before.
They've already met aliens that are like...
And pissed them off!
Like, attacking other aliens and killing them for their, like, lymphatic...
I don't know how to tell you this, but in about 15 minutes from now, you're going to feel really bad for Trip.
Okay.
These guys are doing such a bad job of establishing what these characters are actually like.
How long's it been, sir? To which Archer replies, about 5 minutes longer than the last time you called.
Is he just bored in there? Like, does he just need,
he's just
like...
panicking. He's trapped in a small room filled with smoke that was burning his lungs, and he has to be there for 3 hours. But Archer tries to calm him down. Remember why he's there. But for Archer, the most important thing is what he has been doing all this time is getting his meal ready for Porthos!
Yay!
And tragically, what is, I believe, is going to be our only Porthos sighting of this episode. But he does sit up and beg for his bowl.
Oh.
And Archer literally calls him a good boy.
Yes, he is a good boy.
He is a good boy.
End of episode. Nope, that's not real. So Trip is still in his tiny room. He is playing some sort of color matching game that apparently he needs to pass to prove that his cognition is up to the point that he's going to be okay. It literally looks like, you remember the old Simon game where it was like you had the four colors? It's an alien version of that. So the door opens. Now, I understand you're not going to believe me when I tell you all of this, but two things happen at the same time. One is that he steps out of the airlock into Pee-wee's playhouse. And that the second is that this entire next sequence is shot like an anti-marijuana movie from the 1960s. The alien ship looks like if you were at a cheap consuite party where the theme was alien control room, spend less than $25. Ovals. All the doors are ovals. More ovals are posted on the wall. Their control, maybe it's a control apparatus. The primary technology we see are these vase-shaped tables with orbs on top of them. And I'm not kidding, it looks like they have shag carpeting. The aliens, my first reaction was they kind of look like potato people. Because they were more like yam people, because they have this dark orangish skin, bumpy skulls, obviously, and they are wrapped in what appears to be tin foil. Like skin tight, they have these skin tight silver uniforms. Okay? They are called the Zerillians. Now, the other thing is that this is shot like Trip is tripping balls. Like he is stoned out of his mind because there's a little bit of reverb on there, so everything sounds like it's slurred. And also, the actor who plays Trip is doing a great job of playing like, play it cool, man. Play it cool. They don't know you're high. They don't know you're high. The aliens are checking. They seem nice. They're checking in on me. You doing okay? He's like, yeah. It's what. Let me fix the warp engine of your ship. Don't you think you should relax a bit? No, let's do it right now. Let's
do it right now, man.
But he's been apparently hotboxing for 3 hours. So Trip's not doing well. Definitely not someone I would work on the warp engine for my spaceship. That's
great.
I'm going to spoil it and say I absolutely love this episode. I'm amazed they went for it. It literally looks like something from Lost in Space. It is literally like big pieces of insulation tubing going all over the places and those big coiled ropes. And all you see is Trip and this alien lady, who we'll meet shortly, crawling underneath it like pretending that they're doing something.
Oh my god. Like you gotta get under the spaceship. Like it's a chassis of a car. Yeah. He's got little roller things he's lying on.
Trip comes out, rolls out, well, your transmission's fucked. I don't know what to tell you. It is so, this episode is so goofy looking. I came around to the other end and ended up loving it, but it is so cheesy. Like, she's trying to explain what the problem is, but Trip is just too strung out, and her name, we learn, is Alen. And she says, maybe you should rest, to the point where it looks like she's about to call security over. That's the tone in the voice, where it's not like, I'm worried about you. It's like, I'm worried about you.
I'm surprised that Phlox, like, presumably they knew what this atmosphere on the ship was going to be like. And so you'd think Phlox would have checked, like, how would these chemicals in this particular atmosphere, like, affect a human brain?
Perhaps they should have had a second person come with Trip. It makes no sense that they sent him out on this thing alone.
Or maybe they should have, honestly, had a human doctor who specializes in humans be the doctor on the ship for a ship that has all but two humans and would have had all but one human without Phlox. Instead of, like, this, he appears, like, Phlox seems to be, like, a zoologist, like an alien zoologist.
But I think the point is that he understands alien, so, like, alien physiology. So, like, if they fuck up, which they're going to, and hurt somebody, which they're going to,
that makes
he
sense.
Can fix them, maybe.
But shouldn't you also have, like, a doctor that knows about humans? Yeah, yeah. Like, it's not clear that Phlox has, like, ever done doctoring for humans before.
Are you saying it's like if you want to have a female gynecologist?
I want to have a human gynecologist.
See, now what we're describing is Zoidberg from Futurama. Sir, it's Mr. Tucker again. Trip is tripping. While working on the engine, it's the 3 a.m. call from someone who took too much THC and is worried about, he wants to go back to, he's pulling a Sato. He wants to go back right now, even though Archer explains to him, it'd still take 3 hours for decompression. He tells him to calm down. He will work things out. Calls the Cerulean captain. The alien captain just basically says, this dude just needs to lay down for a bit and have some orange juice. Like, so Archer calls Trip back and orders him to take a nap. He gives him a timeout. Trip wakes up to the sound of crashing waves. Len is there and explains that Archer sent the recordings to help him relax. Now, the piece of furniture he's laying on, it looks so amazingly Art Deco 60s. Again, it is basically this huge slab, this huge square of plastic, not a cube, and it has had an oval cut out of it so that you could lay in it. It looks like a Virginia Slims ad comes to life, I tell you that.
These guys love their oval.
So Trip is talking to Alen, the sexy alien lady that we saw before. Trip points to the wall and says, what's that? Because the wall, frankly, looks disgusting. It looks like that green and white shag carpeting I was telling you about. And it looks like a rock climbing wall because there are things jutting out of it. Alen walks over, pulls a piece off, and eats it. This is how they grow the food on this ship. She offers some to Trip. Then she picks up what looks to be a Tupperware bowl full of Jell-O shots and says, this is the closest we could come to water.
Wait, but what?
The Cerulean's don't have water, but they were able to synthesize something like it in the form of these gelatinous cubes. Okay, guys, let's put that. Okay, new note, everybody. Let's put that. Let's move that up on the diplomatic checklist. Do you have water?
Also on the away team checklist, bring water.
Do you know what water is?
I mean, they did, like, take rations and shit when they went down to that away mission. Why would he not have a pack of, like, food bars?
The crazier thing for me, water? And again, as we have learned many times, I am not a scientist, but you have, I mean, even if you're elsewhere in the universe with known physics, you have hydrogen and maybe builds up to oxygen, you know. You have right. some, you have, yeah. We have a sentient bipedal form of life.
Yeah.
That doesn't know what water is.
Water
like,
feels.
You think they would have come across it at some point.
Yeah. Seems like it's something that they would know.
Need or about. Know. But Alen starts hand feeding Trip these Jell-O cubes. And when she touches her face, there's just a little spark of electricity. This actress is doing amazing face work. She's very, like, the makeup is not particularly alerting. Like I said, she has bumps and mottles all over her face, standard. But she is doing amazing eye work. She's doing some killer smizing throughout this scene. She is selling it. She offers Trip some more Jell-O shots. They eye fuck for a few more seconds. Then Alen says they should get back to the repairs. Trips asks if they can bring the bowl with them.
Okay. So are there drugs in the Jell-O shot? Are they actually Jell-O shots? But did Phlox screw up and just send them the recipe for Jell-O shots instead of
mescaline.
Water?
He has two jars on his desk. Yes. One says mescaline and one says water. Let me just put this in the package there. Oh, wait a minute. My shoelace is untied. T'Pol checks in with Trip. The engines are repaired. They need to recharge. Hey, guess what? They've got grass on the floor. Green grass. Is Vulcan grass green? While they wait for the coils to regenerate, Alen tells Trip there's something he should see. So Alen takes Trip into their version of a holodeck. So they step into a room. Do you remember in the late 80s, early 90s, when they started making holographic stickers that were just like patterns that were slightly yeah. offset?
Yeah. Yes.
So like red dots, yellow dots, green, like just slightly off, but foil. Imagine an entire room wallpapered. A room that has a very strange, very asymmetrical shape.
Maybe I'm not kidding. Not tripping. Maybe it's just when you're in this environment, you just feel like you are, and you kind of like it, like tricks you into thinking that like there's something going on with your brain.
It's like Disney World.
It looks like non-denominational wrapping paper that you buy in the middle of the year.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Oh my God.
So she walks over and takes a little remote control off of the wall and hits a button. It's a holodeck. Like I said, everything changes. It's amazing HD color. She shows him Thera, her homeworld, which kind of looks like Tatooine, except it has oceans. They have oceans.
But not water.
But is it oceans of water?
Is it like a methane ocean?
Methane or something.
Well, that could Trip survive in that atmosphere? That's my question. So they wander around for a little bit. She changes it again, and now they're on the ocean, and Trip is a little man in a boat. She summons a square bowl with clear crystals in it. It looks literally just like if you went to the Joann Fabric and they have those little circular crystals there. It's literally just a bowl of that.
Is this done like, is it done in like a sexy way? Like, is this supposed to be sexy?
Kind of, yeah.
Like, I mean, is she coming on to him, or are we supposed to think
she's definitely getting that, but she's definitely like her physicality and, like I said, her facial work. She's definitely like projecting approachability, I guess. They're on a little boat. It's like magic hour in there. They're very close. They're just talking in low
voices.
Yeah,
sounds like a date.
Yeah, it is getting into that sort of mood. She then produces this bowl filled with these little crystals. She puts her hands in it and says, puts a hand in it and says, this is a game we play. Trip puts his hand. The crystals are glowing.
This cannot be
good. Never fucking play the game. Guys.
Trip puts his hand in the bowl. It's like, are there any rules to this game? And she says, it takes four hands to work.
Oh my God.
So they put it in, and guess what? They can start now reading each other's mind. She says, your favorite food is catfish. Hers is datura root. Trip says, you find me attractive. And Alen says, you like having people find you attractive, don't you?
She sizes Trip up immediately.
This actress is doing amazing work. But they get reactor blocked. There's a notification that the coils are coming online. It's game over. Alen says, you better stand up. I was hoping Trip would say, it's going to take me a minute. But she said that because she's ending the simulation. They are back in the room that looks like a trapper keeper from the 1990s.
It would have been so much better, though, if she just left him sitting and he just ends up sitting on the ground.
Trip is back on the shuttle. He had a great time. He won't shut up about how much he enjoyed being on the aliens ship. And back on the bridge, Archer is saying their goodbyes. That's the end of the episode. No, we're only halfway through.
Oh, my God. Oh,
okay.
We're in the mess hall. Trip's talking to Malcolm about how amazing the holodeck was, and Malcolm's response is, if we had one, I could only imagine what it would be used for.
All right, stop being creepy.
Which,
Malcolm.
Fair. Okay, come on. That's the first thing you hear about the holodeck's the thing you think about.
Of course. Just calm down. You're still in a professional environment.
Yeah, you don't have to. You can think it, but you don't need to say it out loud.
At work. This is still a professional environment.
You tell me this again and again and again and again. Trip compliments the scrambled eggs he's been chowing down. Trip has been shoveling food down. And he stretches his arm uncomfortably and sees that he has a wart growing on his wrist. Is he having an allergic reaction? It's time to get check in with Doc Phlox. Phlox's first question is, did his visit involve any romance? Trip denies it. He was over there to work. Because it seems like he did a little bit more than repair work. The bump on his wrist isn't a wart. It's a nipple. I'm not sure if congratulations are in order. There he is, pregnant.
Yes! I called it!
Wait, sorry. He's got a bump on his arm.
He has developed a nipple on his wrist.
And it's a nipple. Mm-hmm. And that That means he's pregnant?
No, there's more coming. But that's just, I just wanted to get the reaction to the news.
But Phlox is, because Phlox is not there, right? They're just doing this via, like, video chat?
No, Phlox is, he is in medical bay.
Oh, Trip is in medical bay. He went all the way back and did 3 hours. Okay, that makes a little more sense. I thought maybe he was just, like, looking at it.
Yeah, he's like, Doc, I got this thing on my wrist. But
still, does he have, like, mammary glands in his wrist now?
I'm not getting into the mammal discussion. I got burned last time. I got taken to task. Phlox says, the blastocyte is located between the 6th and 7th intercostals.
So wait, sorry, where in his body is this?
It's on the left side of his chest. Phlox says, I said this before, but I'll say it again. It's on the sort of left side of his chest. They show like a little 3D diagram of it. And Phlox says, the blastocyte is located between the 6th and 7th intercostals. So this episode is going to be played for laughs. It's going to be a lot of...
Yeah. Is this a comedy episode? Like,
yes,
this is a funny episode.
Trip pops out of an MRI-like machine wearing some very, very tight undies. You see Trip's tuck in this episode.
Oh, I don't need to see that.
Phlox is there, obviously. It's med bay. Archer and T'Pol are there as well. There's a growth on his upper chest that is the embryo. Phlox makes it weird by telling Trip he'll probably be happy to know that it's technically not his child. Zerillians only use genetic material from the mother. The male is simply the host. The reason that I believe they wrote it that way is to excuse Trip from having anything to do with the upbringing of this child, because I, as a viewer, strongly suspect we're never going to hear about this kid ever again.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That makes sense.
It's kind of like the reverse of those episodes of Bonanza when, oh, Haas is going to get married, and you know that the woman is going to be dead before the end of the episode.
I don't know. Like, they've done it before. I mean, just think about, like, Worf and Alexander. Like, you get to DS9, right, and there was, like, seasons where I'm like, didn't he have a son?
Where's your
like,
kid,
where
man?
Is he? And then at some point they're like, oh, we forgot. We should probably explain what's going on with this.
But that just reeks of preemptive story writing. Happens is, like, it's not his biological child, so he has no responsibility, which is nonsense.
Right.
I mean, I hope to God someday my son bursts out of my chest and I get to hold him in my arms as I die.
Yeah, that's all y'all hope. I mean, for you. We all hope that for you.
Thank you. The male is simply the host. Trip asks how it happened, and the temperature of the room changes wildly as no one wants to tell him the first thing that popped into all of their minds. Phlox, Archer, and T'Pol. Phlox says, delicately, for him, we don't have any data on their mating procedures, but I don't think it would be that difficult for you to recollect a sexual encounter. T'Pol has been waiting for this moment, and she steps up to plate like she knows the slow ball is coming right down the center. 3 days. You were only there for 3 days, and you couldn't control yourself.
You had one job, and you did far more than you needed to.
Archer doesn't know where to look in this situation. But Trip denies it. I'm telling you, Captain, I was a complete gentleman the entire time.
To be fair, with the way that humans have sex, I don't see how sex could have led to this at all. So clearly something else happened.
Right. I mean, he was clearly implanted with something in some way or whatever, but yes.
Trip asks Phlox if there's any way to get it out of him without hurting the embryo. No, the embryo has integrated into your pericardium, and Phlox just doesn't have enough information. T'Pol goes in.
Are we that worried about this embryo?
Well, I mean, it's a fair question that if I had an alien organism growing in my body, I think I might be concerned about what happens
to myself. Yeah, but they didn't want to get into an abortion discussion.
Well,
because that's what it would have ended up being.
Yeah, but then being like, we have to like make sure we don't hurt this embryo no matter what, like, you are getting into an abortion discussion. Yep, you are falling on a side.
That's fair.
Having Having delivered the body blow, she says, "So, she wanted to see her home planet. Perhaps the next step would have been meeting her holographic parents."
Shit,
Archer is barely holding it together. And poor Trip just has to sit there.
DePaul's been doing some reading.
She is doing her late night comedy stand-up roast of Trip.
I love it.
Are they sure it's like an embryo? Like it could just, or like, do you know what I mean? Like it does just seem like they implanted something. Like,
right? Yeah.
Like this seems bad. Like I feel like your first thing should be like, we need to get rid of this as soon as possible.
Those are valid questions. At no point does this episode present this as anything other than this is an embryo.
Like it could be a parasite.
Right.
Again, we're in an alien situation where he could have a chest burster.
It could be an
feed on his body from the inside out.
Yep.
The tone of this episode suggests none of that. This is comedy. This is
they just want to be like, ha ha ha, the guy got pregnant.
Yep. So Trip lays it out. He's being accused of sexual misconduct. He's been in Starfleet for 12 years, and he wouldn't throw his career away that way. He considers himself a diplomat from the minute he was on the vessel. Well, there was that box of pebbles.
Uh-oh.
Pebbles? That might be the key. T'Pol has one more joke in here, and she goes in for the kill. One of the first things a diplomat learns is not to stick their fingers where they don't belong.
Shit, T'Pol. And
I just wanted that moment for her to throw the microphone down. Okay.
She is like questioning why she is there. Like why she is like, why did I come on this ship?
I really want her to be like with Hoshi, like it. Like, watch this. Maybe you shouldn't stick your fingers where they don't belong.
Yeah, like that night, like she's with Hoshi, and she's like, so then I said this.
Do they have stand-up comedy on Vulcan? They must. So, not knowing what this is doing to Trip, they decide to go look for the Zerillians. Malcolm and T'Pol will get to work on that. Can Trip return to duties? Well, there's a chance of nausea every morning.
Oh my god.
I actually expect...
But he's not pregnant.
Yeah.
I expect Phlox to have one of those like big 60s surgeon things where it has like the reflecting light on it. This episode is straight out of the 60s. It's
the idea that like it would have any of the same symptoms as like a human with a uterus carrying a baby.
Yeah, no.
He needs to check in with Phlox every day because that nipple may not be the only surprise your body has in store for you. Can you imagine some of the things, some of the behavior changes that Trip might be exhibiting this episode? I don't think you can. Actually, you almost certainly can.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. I'm pretty sure I can. Is he, like, moody and
Trip?
Also, do we know what he is like when he doesn't have weird things affecting him at this point?
Really great point.
I actually don't know what Trip is like when he does not have weird alien giving him weird hormone stuff or like on drugs.
This poor guy has been through a journey.
He
was initially set on the mission to calm everybody down because he was the most serious minded guy in Starfleet. But it's like you get half a glass of sherry into him and he's dancing on the table. Final moment. Trip is obviously very concerned about keeping this private medical information that could affect his life and career private. He asks if we can keep this all between ourselves and everybody. They don't do it, but everybody's like, oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, sure. Oh, obviously, yeah, no, we're never, no, nothing like that.
Yeah, sorry. Starfleet does not have HIPAA.
No, there's no HIPAA.
Back in engineering, Trip is back on the job. He is taking that little elevator between levels when he starts obsessing about the guardrail that flips up and down. Gang, Trip is nesting.
Oh my god, it's not safe enough.
He yells at his assistant, this lift guard is a meter off the ground. What use would that be for a small person? To which Dillard not irresponsibly replies, what small persons?
There are no small people.
A short alien, a child, this thing's a death trap. Dillard is confused, as is Trip. Cut to.
So basically they're using Trip is pregnant as a way to like run mm-hmm. through cliches
yep.
about pregnant women to like mm-hmm. make fun of.
Or, well, I think they're making fun of the fact that it's happening to Trip. Seeing yeah. a man do this, that's crazy.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's not surprising.
But still, like, this was like 2001, right? Like, right.
But it's still not surprising. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at seeing that storyline and that played that way today. Like,
I was going to save this to later, but this might be a good time to bring this up, Maria, because on Strange New Worlds, they did a very 50s, 60s thing where two characters, a married couple, body switched. And it was literally like, you don't know how hard my job is. You don't know how hard my job is. And it was literally that level of, this is just the premise of it. But they played it out in a much better way.
Right. Yeah, because they didn't use it to like make fun of women.
Well, yeah, and it wasn't like the male character all of a sudden got like all hormonal.
Ladies be hormonal.
Exactly.
Which literally, sorry, I've been watching DS9, and I got to the Quark. I just like this week got to the Quark cross-dressing episode where literally the jokes were just ladies be hormonal.
We are back in the mess hall. Time for more Starfleet casual. Trip is wearing, it's a white cotton button-up that is literally maybe a size to half a size too big for him. He doesn't have it tucked in. It's not gigantic. It's not like David Byrne's big suit. It is not maternity wear. It is just a plain white shirt that is a little bit too big for him to wear.
A slightly large shirt. Is it like when on TV shows when the actress gets pregnant and they have to cover her pregnancy, so all of a sudden this woman who's been wearing tight, lovely fitting shirts all of a sudden's in giant sweaters and carrying huge purses.
I almost wanted to Paul to walk into the room and go, "Oh my God, what is this?
You look hideous."
Trip walks in, and this poor guy, two episodes in a row, he is convinced that everyone is staring at him and talking about him.
I was just about to say, like, are we going to get a scene where he's complaining about how fat he feels?
Trip walks in and complains to Archer that T'Pol must have spilled the beans and that it was intentional, but he's not so mad that he doesn't sit down and immediately start shoveling down that sweet, sweet chicken tetrazzini that they're having for dinner. Phlox, who's at the meal...
Sorry, I just had a really funny thought, though, guys.
Lay it on me.
If you're talking about pregnancy symptoms, I actually do think it'd be funny if he was actually going through real pregnancy symptoms, like his feet were hurting or his nipples hurt, and he like is like, my wrist!
Well.
Please. Please.
But see, now you got me thinking about, and I don't want to forget this joke, how funny it would be if, like, every third episode Trip got pregnant by a different alien species.
That just becomes his thing. That's
just, not intentionally. Like, it's weird. It's like, well, you shouldn't have stood in his shadow. That's how they reproduce. I didn't know that. Phlox notices that Trip has a bandage on his wrist. Did he cut himself? Not to gross you all out, but he has another nipple on his wrist. Archer's kind of grossed out, and Phlox is, as you might imagine, intrigued.
Wait, do they... On the show, do you see the wrist nipple?
You do.
Does it look like a nipple? Like, does it have an like areola?
To me, it looks like... No, it doesn't. No, okay, it definitely doesn't have the areola.
Why would they show a nipple in Star Trek, even if it is on your wrist?
Well, they will, they will show a nipple.
Well, I mean, okay, I guess it's a guy's nipple, so it's okay.
I'm so confused about these nipples. Because, the purpose of a nipple, it like, on humans, we have nipples that produce milk, but that has lots of water in it. So presumably, like, these nipples are not producing milk.
Maybe in this species, it's like the blood. Maybe
yeah, they produce the something shell. Else yeah. that this, so something that doesn't have water.
Guess what? That question is absolutely not answered at any point in time.
You know, this is not, honestly, it's not a thing that I would feel like I'm coming out of a Star Trek episode thinking, but what was the purpose of the nipple? It's not a normal thing, guys.
Trip is concerned. How many will he get? Will they go away afterwards? Is he now provably a witch? He does not ask.
How many will he get?
So on that first episode, we mentioned that this was the first time like we've seen a nipple. Is this the first time on Star Trek they've used the word nipple?
Don't know. That's a good question. Maybe they might have used it in, I suppose it's possible they might have used it in Next Gen to describe like, you know, a nipple that you would feed up like an artificial nipple, like a bottle maybe.
We need a Star Trek consultant. Do you think we can recruit Tim Farley for this?
Here, let me just search Google Maria, for Star Trek nipple.
You think we should have an actual Star Trek expert on our Star Trek podcast?
Yeah, I think we should get a Star Trek expert.
Is that what you're saying?
Just for specific questions like this. Like, I don't actually want them on the show. That's crazy.
Archer points out that it's been a week of searching for the Zerillians, and they need to consider the possibility that they won't find them. Trip, his mouth full of food, is incredulous. I have to deliver this baby? It is so close to being fried green tomatoes. It's amazing.
Wait, so Locke says the Zerillians aren't there anymore?
No, they the fucked off.
They knocked Trip off. Man,
thank you, Trip.
This is a scam they pull.
I'm so confused about whether they knew that
What were her intentions in this?
What are your intentions towards my...
towards our Trip.
Towards my chief engineer.
I always forget that Trip is the chief engineer. He just doesn't seem like he
literally
should
said
be.
It's not
doesn't
hard.
Doesn't seem like he's competent.
Yeah. Well, it's not hard, Jamie, considering he once said that he doesn't want to be stuck in engineering.
Great point.
So Trip is incredulous. He's going to have to deliver this baby. And Phlox says, more than that, you're going to have to take care of this thing. Until we don't know how long it's going to need to sustain itself. But Trip has a career. He doesn't want to be a working mother. He doesn't actually say that, but it's heavily implied. Trip wants to be a 90s woman where he has it all. Archer finds this very funny and is barely concealing his laughter.
Like, this is what they're worried about, and not like when this thing like comes to terms, will it murder him? Is it going to murder the host?
Also, how is it going to come out of him? Through what part of him is it going to come out? I mean, I assume we're getting that answer.
We
at some
are
point.
Literally dealing with a xenomorph situation.
But instead, they're just like, it's going to be so hard having my career while raising this weird alien baby.
Alien baby.
Although, I would watch the fuck out of that show.
Yes.
Trip's going through engineering with a baby Bjorn, and there's just like this amorphous blob in there. Locke says the gestation period will last maybe 5 to 6 weeks. Now that Trip has been infested with an alien life
form.
Well,
it has to fit into one episode this show.
That's fair. They can't be like 9 months later.
Like the whole rest of the season. He's just like getting
more
and more pregnant.
Wouldn't that be great though? Like the season finale is Trip delivering his baby through his ear or whatever.
They get trapped in a turbo lift and they can't get to med bay, and it's winter.
And Porthos has to deliver anything.
And they name the baby John Porthos Trip. Trip is concerned about what kind of symptoms he might be looking forward to. Archer suggests he stick to civilian clothing. Helps hide the bulge. Trip freaks out. Asks how much bigger he's going to be while simultaneously summoning the waiter for more chicken tetrazzini. There is a little ensign who's bringing food in.
Did they change, like, Trip's body? Like, does he look different?
You will see later, it is you see something growing out of his chest.
How high would you recommend I be before watching this? Because
you must be this
like
high to watch
is
this episode.
Pretty high.
If you're not high, this episode will make you feel high. As a matter of fact, you need to be careful. You need to be
see,
careful
that's what
when
I was
you go
saying
on
happened to Trip.
When you go onto the alien ship for the first time, it's going to throw you off a bit because you're going to be like, "Oh shit! I think the show knows that I'm high." Archer wants Trip to see Phlox every 8 hours. As the due date gets closer, they'll have a better idea of what Trip's postnatal responsibilities might be. Responsibilities? And Phlox says, you may very well be putting those nipples to work before you know it.
Yes!
But as soon as Phlox says, again, you may very well be putting those nipples to work before you know it, we smash cut to the ensign who has just walked back in with the food tray. So you see why I like this episode.
That's great. That's beautifully done.
Archer points out the bright side. This is the first interspecies pregnancy involving a human, which strikes me on because they've known Vulcans for 100 years, and we know that humans and Vulcans can interbreed. That's just, but anyway.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, that is
at which point I thought to myself, hold up, this child grew up, this species grows up in an entirely different atmosphere that he had to spend 3 hours getting used to.
Well, that's a great point. How is this child going to breathe?
Do they ask this question? No.
No?
Nope.
Like, we'll...
Sorry, because it's so not part human. We have established it's not part human.
No, it is not. It is no genetic information from Trip.
In spite of the fact that he somehow has to feed it with its with his new nipples.
Yep. Yeah, like that's... Like, will his body produce whatever this infant eats through his nipples?
Wouldn't that not potentially, you know... kill him?
Not considered for a moment.
I love it. All right. Gotta just turn that part of your brain off.
So they've cut to the bridge. They found the Zerillian ship. Now, she tells them all in the captain's mess that they have found the Zerillian ship. They need to head to the bridge. They all rush out. But what does Trip do? He grabs himself a handful of breadsticks because you never know when you're going to need those. Right. They close on the ship, put it on view screen. Hey, that doesn't look like the Zerillian ship we were following. It's a Klingon battle cruiser.
Oh, great.
Oh, good. Oh, shit. That's what it's the cops. Trip is distraught. Where are the Zerillians? And T'Pol says, it appears your repairs didn't last that long. They're doing the exact same thing again. They're following behind the Klingon ship. Archer asks Hoshi how comms are, and she has faith that they're working properly. They hail the Klingons. Archer politely and respectfully says, oh, shit, they're opening fire! That's a Klingon hello. Trip, on the scanners, points out that the Klingon starboard nacelle is fluctuating just like the Enterprises did. Klingons are mad. It's nice to see TNG. I know we saw Klang the Klingon and a few of them again. It's just nice to see Next Generation Klingons again. I think those are probably my favorite era of Klingons, by the way. Archer apologizes for interrupting their Klingoning, but it sounds, and he sounds like a salesman here. Are you having problems with your spaceship?
I think it's clinging on.
That's right. They are clinging on, and they are the other side is Star Trekking across the universe. You got me there. Archer starts to describe, hey, are you having problems with your ship? It sounds like a commercial. It's like, are you having lower back problems followed by a chilling sensation in your left arm? Blah, blah, blah. The Klingons are upset that they know this. They, of course, accuse the Enterprise of causing the problems. And the Enterprise explains, you've got a ship that's been following you. This has happened to us. The Klingons are, imaginably, as you might imagine, really pissed off about this and want to kill absolutely everybody on the alien ship. Archer tries to stick up for them. The Klingons are having none of it. Archer is keeping it together. Like, he's keeping it chill. It's all about to go south because the Klingons are tired of talking to the humans. Guess what happens? T'Pol steps up and sticks up for Archer. She lays it down for the captain that less than a month ago, Captain Archer stood in the High Council chamber in Kronos. The Chancellor himself called him a man of honor, a brother. She lays out the plot of the end of the first episode and says, you are in his debt.
Bitch.
Now, because T'Pol is a woman in the early aughts, even though she's won, she gives him a win. You would be showing both honor and wisdom to grant his request. Pause. For no goddamn reason, Trip decides to pipe up.
Fuck's sake, Trip.
Trip even, like, there?
Why is
Shouldn't he be in engineering?
Go on maternity leave.
He's going to have it all. He's going to have the career and the Park Avenue apartment and the...
Not while you're delivering the child that nobody's ever delivered before.
He explains the holodeck he saw while he was there. If you don't kill them, I'm sure they'll share it with you. Klingons are intrigued. They decide to send a landing party over. So the Klingons decide to send a landing party over to investigate this. Archer asks them to take Trip with them. And Vorak replies, he talks too much.
This is a real bash trip episode.
Trip is really getting it. He's just like a badminton shuttlecock. He just deserved one side it
after
the
last episode.
Absolutely, he deserved it. I think
I told you this was the episode you were waiting for. It's here.
Yeah, I think this was like, they were like, oh, I mean, Trip's been a real dick so far. We got to at least give him some back.
Archer wants Trip to go on the landing party. Vorik sees no value in having him there. But there's another reason. He has unfinished business over there. There's a pregnancy involved. The Klingons, of course, think that Trip is the one who knocked up a female alien. It's like, huh, you know, lots of Klingon bro humor about we'll be doing you a favor if you don't have to go back there and deal with that.
Lovely.
This plays out like on that level for a while. And then Archer says, well, you got to show him. So Trip lifts up his shirt and we see the growth. Now, this is kind of a cool effect because it's not like it's a slight distension on it. And it has a glowing blue light. So it's kind of like when you stick a flashlight under your hand and you can see that.
Why is Trip not under constant medical surveillance? He has a glowing blue thing on him and he's still working?
It's got to be changing his body. Because, like, there's no way that this fetus could grow in his body when, like, these aliens have a totally different atmosphere. They've never seen water before. Like... So in order for it to work in Trip's body, it has to be changing Trip's body somehow to create like a space for the alien fetus.
You know, you could write a really interesting episode based around that premise.
But they chose not to.
This episode,
but what if?
It doesn't think about any of these things. It's like treating pregnancy as if it were magic.
And in the history of Starfleet, this is a major event. They point out repeatedly.
Yeah.
I'm still like, I'm sorry, guys. I'm stuck on this. He should be under constant medical surveillance.
Dr. Bashir's great-grandfather wrote his doctoral thesis on this case.
I was just going to say, like, they should be trying to get all the data from him that they can possibly get.
Yeah, I mean, no, they're the worst science ship ever.
Yeah, like Phlox could, yeah, like writing about this, he can get whatever, like the, like...
Get a grant.
Like the Nobel Prize of Nobel Medicine of...
Space Nobel Prize. Yeah,
Space Nobel Prize.
Can you have a Space Nobel in... Can we have Space Swedish to give them the Nobel Prize?
I mean, there's already Space Australians.
Yeah, clearly, this is just the next logical. So he shows off his
He does a little bit of flesh. Klingons find this hilarious. We are back on the Zerillian ship with the Klingons and Trip. Trip explains the deal to the Zerillian captain, the holodeck for their lives. The Klingons pass over a little flash drive with a survey of the Klingon capital to have that adapted into the holodeck, and they agree. Alan's first statement to Trip when they're alone is, the reactor worked fine for 6 days, and then it went offline again. To which Trip says, bitch, you got me pregnant. He doesn't, but he should have.
I don't give a shit about your reactor. Oh my god.
Trip reveals his bulge, his other bulge, and Alan gasps.
So this was not intentional.
It was not. She didn't know it could happen with another species.
Okay, but she did the things that lead to it in
exactly
their species?
One of the things Phlox mentioned was that they would, like, in terms of just transmitting, I guess, the genetic data from one thing to another, there would have had to have been some medium, which is apparently what the bowl of pebbles was.
Diamonds is.
Yeah. Trip asks her to remove it.
It really makes, like, the like, this is just a game we play.
Yeah.
This is just a game. There's a line you would expect. Baby, this is just a game we play.
Yeah, I mean, technically, was Trip raped?
He was, I mean,
there was inseminated. There was certainly no consent. I mean, he like, was definitely was like
tricked into something that was not the same for her as it was for him.
This is exactly my point. You can only do like, as this is the 60s level version of a man being pregnant joke versus also you absolutely, this would be an extremely different episode if it was one of the female characters.
Yeah, it's true.
But yeah, he was him, and her excuse is, I didn't know it could happen. Again, I think this is just what this phrase does, because we've seen them only two times, but every time they're like tailgating another
and
species.
And when we're probably causing never problems, see them again.
They need the ship to pull over. Oh no, our engine's broken.
This could be their thing where they literally just go around the universe. Like maybe they can only implant in other aliens.
Scene. They're the brown-headed cowbirds of aliens. That would be an interesting episode.
There are so many things that would be interesting episodes.
Trip asks her to remove it, assuming it will be safe to do so. And she says, yes, it's still early enough to transfer to another host. So I guess some other fucking dude on the ship has to deal with this problem.
He's like, God damn it.
I don't know you.
Sure, now she has have that awkward conversation with every guy on the ship. Hey!
Can't help but notice you don't have a glowing bulge. Wondering if you're seeing anybody?
Delightful!
on Alien Grindr. It's like, you? No bulge? Me? Maybe more? Alen does a scan of Trip and says, she looks very healthy. It's a girl! So I just imagine Trip on social media in the future. Speaking as the father of a daughter, I strongly feel.
I still like don't understand how alien gender works at all.
And I would like to know, was there an alien gender reveal party? Because if this show was done today, there absolutely would.
It's when it explodes out of his chest and you see whether it's pink or it's blue. The blood is just spread all over the wall and says, it's a girl.
Does Trip go on the ship alone again?
No, the Klingons are with him on this trip. This is.
But no other humans?
No other humans. Trip and a bunch of Klingons.
That seems safe.
Yep. This is the moment. We're on the holodeck. They have scanned Klingon capital. And I'm the so Klingon excited. Captain points and says, I can see my house from here.
It's such a good line.
This was one of my, like, six things that I knew about the show, was that line.
I didn't realize it was that early on in the series, so that shows you how much I have actually seen of Enterprise, because clearly it was not very much.
So the Klingons love the technology, they agree to exchange the lives of the crew for it, as well as 51% of equity in the company.
So the Klingons get this technology, but the humans don't.
It's not stated that they do.
Okay.
But then they're not threatening the lives of these aliens for it.
I feel like the Klingons are not sharing.
Well, but no, I feel like the aliens knocked up your engineer. At least give him a thumb drive with the plans for a holiday, you know?
Yeah, like there's reason why the aliens
child you can give me these blueprints.
Like they could also like there's nothing stopping them from sharing it with the humans.
Maria, right, exactly.
You sound like the most calm member of a Space Maury Povich audience. You knocked up their engineer. You need to give them
another show I would watch. Like, yes,
the
alien baby is yours.
So Archer thanks the Klingons for their help. They hope that in the future they can know, fuck you, humans. We're done here. We're equal. Don't want to talk to you anymore. Don't want to see you ever. Klingons out.
Peace.
I like just asshole Klingons, I think. I don't want to hear any justification. They're just angry all the time. So we're back in the captain's mess. They sum up the episode. Trip, Archer, and T'Pol having a meal together. I did not make a note of what they were eating. It didn't seem particularly fancy.
Wait, they take the baby out of him, right?
Yes, they do.
And we don't see how that happens. It just happens magically.
No. Given the technology that we've seen on this alien ship, I can only imagine It would probably have been like, you know those old TV shows where they want to show that somebody is a ghost and you see like their body laying down and then they do a process shot of them sitting up and walking away and the body's... It probably would have been like that level based on like where the technology of this alien civilization is. So Archer asks DePaul, hey, that business about the Klingon Chancellor... Because remember, they never translated what the Chancellor said when they were in the Klingon High Council, though he's the captain of the ship...
And they had a translator with them.
And there was this was a note. Sato specifically said, "You don't want to know what it is." He said,
"Yeah."
Even though this is a major meeting between our two species for the first time.
No, I remember
that. So Archer says, "Hey, that business about the Klingon Chancellor calling me a brother," and I wanted to imagine he said, "Does that mean I'm cool that I can say it in Klingon now and put it on my Tinder profile?" T'Pol shuts him down. T'Pol's having an episode. She shuts him down. Klingons are known to exaggerate. I saw no problem doing the same. Archer notes that Tripp's appetite is back to normal. Hey, just eating for one now.
Yeah.
Ugh. T'Pol mentions that this is the first incident of a human male becoming pregnant. And Tripp says, well, I guess that's my note in history. End of episode.
Oh, my Lord. Wow. Well, that was a ride, and I have to say, I am so glad this was one of your episodes.
Dave. How mad are you guys going to be if you watch this and realize I just made up everything I just told you?
Oh my God. We should make a pact that at some point in the future, each of us does this, and we don't know when it's going to be.
So this idea that as a cis man, I could do it as a thought experiment, but like the idea that something could literally come out of my body, another living being, just the idea that Tripp could grapple with that for a moment. That's a very next gen. That would be a fucking crazy thing to do if Geordi or God, you know, Riker, that would be, Riker would Riker. Be exactly like Riker. This episode. This would be exactly like, but like if it was Geordi or somebody else, Data, that would be a fucking crazy episode if Data had to deal with the idea of giving birth. But they're not really concerned about that. They just, practical difficulties. This is where we talk about the techno babble, what made sense, what didn't make sense. In terms of technical difficulties, gotta tell you, beyond that. The things they said in this episode are actually real terms that they use correctly. Now, the whole thing about, again, the issues they didn't explore, can't talk about any of the things about that, but technical difficulties, I feel, is specifically about things about technobabble. So for Phlox's analysis of Tripp's pregnancy, blastocysts are real and are related to pregnancy. Also real are the intercostals, which are the bones, I believe, in his body that the embryo has implanted itself in. And now the all-important how sexy question. Is this on the established scale of that slime being that killed the one lady on Next Gen? 2/7 of 9. And I'm going to give this episode a 7. The actress who played Alen, her name is Julian Christie. She did an amazing job with her physicality. Her eye work I mentioned, but there's also the things where she's wearing a very tight uniform and stuff, but just the way she's posing and stuff, very alluring. And I could believe that Tripp was attracted to this, you know, baked potato woman. She did a great job. Also, as I mentioned, supporting Nob, excuse me, that's a Freudian slip there. Let's let that one go. Supporting nod to T'Pol for the way she was perched on the captain's chair. Where's Riker in this episode? He could have been in a lot of places. I suppose he was on shore watching them on the boat through a telescope.
So he was still in the holodeck.
He was in a holodeck in a holodeck. Good boy, Porthos. Porthos only has one scene, but he does sit up and beg, and he is literally called a good boy. So
does he get a treat?
He is being fed. Archer is feeding him at that point. He asks him to sit up to get his bowl of food. And he does like a good boy with his little paws dangling.
Oh.
So we all know that William Riker has been watching this series, especially this episode in particular. But what else has he been binging on the holodeck? It's time for Riker Mendations. Who wants to go first? Maria.
I am going to plug, unfortunately, I'm not biased at all, but I'm going to plug my friend Scott Sigler, because I have been listening to his Aliens book, Phalanx, which is read by Bronson Pinchot and is fantastic. I'm not even, like, I love Aliens, but I never was like a super, like, Scott's mm-hmm. a super Alien fan, and I'm completely taken. I love it.
Please ask for his opinions on this episode about a male body being impregnated by an alien.
I'm sure he'd have a lot of opinions.
Jamie.
All right. So with Beyoncé entering her country era, I thought it might be fun to recommend some of my favorite country girlies. And I'm not someone, to be clear, who's like, I don't know anything about, like, established, like culture of country music at all. I just, over the last couple of years, I've been trying to get into lots of different, like, types of music that I haven't traditionally listened to, and country is one of them. So if you're, like, excited about Beyoncé but want to listen to some other current country girls, I like singers. If you like a singer-songwriter country, Ingrid Andress, she has this album called Ladylike that is a no-skip album. It's so good. It's got a lot of charm. It's really funny. If you want more like bluegrass vibes, Molly Tuttle, she has this song, Dooley's Farm, about a marijuana farm, which is pretty funny and a lot of fun. If you like more like a Southern rock, S.G. Goodman, I've just been getting into her, like, I only started listening to her like a week ago and have been really liking her. And then also Yola just has like two really fantastic albums. And then finally, C-Mat, she's more pop country, or I would say maybe country inspired, like maybe not real country, but she's like Irish and queer, and her songs are so much fun. She has a song called I Want to Be a Cowboy Baby that has the line, always the cowboy, never the cow, which makes me laugh every single time I hear it. So yeah, those are all my favorite country girlies that I've been listening to lately.
Sweet.
My recommendation for this week, because this episode dealt with unconventional relationships, an anime that has been making me very, very happy. The title in English is The 100 Girlfriends Who Really, 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 Really Like You a Lot.
Okay.
And the premise of the show is that a young boy who's entering high school goes to a shrine and prays that he will find his true love because he's had his heart broken so many times. And the god of love appears and tells him that he will, but due to a clerical error, he has 100 soulmates and will meet them all. And he must fall in love with all of them or they will die.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow. That escalated.
It went from fantasy to like horror.
I understand, but this is a funny and hilarious series because in harem animes, which is a bunch of cute girls like a guy, it's typically the guy doesn't realize the girls are in love with him, or he ends up with just one of the girls and the others. No, he ends up in a relationship with all of these girls. I've been reading the manga. We're up to 26 so far and still going strong. But the show itself is just so unhinged and funny. They call attention to how crazy it is. They call attention to the fact that they are in an anime series. And that is my summary of Unexpected. Thank you for listening. Next week, Maria will be watching the episode Terra Nova. Can't wait to hear, as well as getting their thoughts on this episode, which could probably be a series in and of itself. Special thanks to K.O. Myers at Particulate Media for sound assistance, to our friend David for the beautiful cover art, and to John Stephen King for being the voice of our computer. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on your podcast app, and tell your friends about it. We really appreciate it. You can follow us on Instagram at Enterprise Splaining and on Blue Sky as at Enterprise Splain. If you have to mail us any comments, as seriously, why did you believe anything Bill said in this episode? It was so obviously fake. You can email us at enterpriseexplaining@gmail.com. And if you want to support us, you can go to buymeacoffee@enterpriseexplaining. We would love to hear from you, and we will see you next episode.
Computer. End program.